Blog Talk Radio.
This is Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida.
But I changed this to Casualty of Silence because it fit my book.
Uh-huh.
It fit my story and everything.
Uh-huh. Now, tell us what made you write the book, first of all, before I get deep into it.
What made me write it is, like I've been telling everyone, God made me write that story. Because I felt that with all the trauma that I was going through, that I had no purpose, and I felt like I was a failure to my kids. And so I just was like speaking out loud, like, God, what is my purpose? And that voice came back and said to write a book. So I'm arguing back and forth with God, like, I don't know how to write a book. And he just said, write a book. And so when he said the last time I sat there and said I didn't know how, he said all he said was write a book. And I was like, okay. And the next day I got up, called the publishers, and asked them how to write one.
Uh-huh.
And that's how it started.
Now, when did you write it, and how long did it take for you to write it?
I started in 2006. It took me a while because I got sidetracked. It also took me a while because I got scared.
Okay.
Everyone would ask me, why was I scared? The scaredness came from that this was going to change my life. It was going to change my life, everyone else's life. So I was scared to do it, so it would take me a long time. It took me about 2 years to go ahead and finish completing it.
Uh-huh.
And so that's how I did. That's how it got completed. It came out originally in 2009.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't like how the first publishing company printed out. They just printed out just as I wrote it, no editing, no nothing. And so I'm thinking I got a good book, but it wasn't as good as I good. So what I did is start revising it to get it just right how I wanted it to capture everyone. So I put my heart and soul into this book, and everything in there is true. Nothing is made up, no nothing.
Man. I can't even ask you about characters because these are real people.
They are real people.
As I'm reading, and you guys, you need to get this book. Didn't you just win an award for this book?
I made top 20 off of, UBAW, is a UBAWA bestseller thing?
Yes.
So I made top 20, and I'm excited about that because I didn't even know I was even considered to be in that. to be somebody top 20. Ooh, I was so happy I started calling everybody, telling them I made the top 20, even though she had the top 25. And I made number 20. I'm excited.
Well, you know what? It's a major accomplishment. That is a major accomplishment for you. So, yes, that is awesome. Congratulations to that. Now.
Thank you.
Okay, Christine. Oh, Lord. I'm sitting there, and you know what? And I have to say this. You were raised in Ohio, right?
No, I was born in Ohio, and I was raised here in Detroit. We came to Detroit when I was two.
Okay. Now, it was so many parts in that book. Oh, my God. It was like me and you were walking hand in hand, and I'm going to tell you why. I was born in Albany, New York. Okay?
Okay.
But I used to live in Saginaw.
Saginaw, Michigan?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm sitting here, but the first part of your story, I was like, this is New York. The way you were describing everything, I was like, man, this is New York. Listen to the way you were saying things, the way the people interacted with each other. I was like, dog, this is New York. This is how we grew up, because you're only 1 year younger than me. So it's like, man, I was like, this chick is in my world. You know, I was like, man. Then when you went to Detroit has its own flavor. You really can't compare anything to Detroit. You really can't. But living in Saginaw, being in Michigan alone, it's still got that same atmosphere. I used to love the snow. Oh, my God, I used to love the snow when I was little. And you were talking about playing in the snow and stuff. I was like, oh, my God, this is me. Oh, my God. And it was just it brought back so many memories. And then in the meantime, you've got all this horror going on, one after another, in your life at such a young age. My God. I want you to describe, and I said characters, but they're real people, so they're non-fictional characters. So I want you to talk about them, because I got some questions I want to ask you once you describe some of the characters that were involved in your life.
Okay. So in the first part of there, some of the names that are in there are not made up, but changed around. I used the first letter of the person that I was talking about. I used their first letter.
Uh-huh.
The only person that's named is accurate is my sister, and her name is Amy. So,
okay.
I tried it, because she was the only one that actually said I could use her name. My kids' names are true, because they're like, you didn't ask us, can you use our name? I said, I don't care, I'm your mama. So I'm going to use it. If I'm describing them how I gave birth to you, I want to make sure I know this is your name. They know this is your name and all that.
Let's do this. Let's talk about your parents. Let's talk about your family members. Kind of give us a synopsis of each one of your family members.
Okay, my father brought us up here from Ohio to Detroit because of the automotive plant, which was,
mm-hmm.
I think he worked at Ford. So that's
okay.
The reason why we came to Detroit.
Okay.
My mother was just a regular housewife, mother, taking care of her kids.
Mm-hmm.
We moved on the west side of Detroit when we first came here. And ask me how I remember all this at 2 years old. I don't know, because
mm-hmm.
I remember everything. I remember the riots that happened. I remember them saying, be in the house. You got to be
mm-hmm.
in the house at a certain time. And I'm
mm-hmm.
trying to look up and see everything. And all I remember is everyone wearing the same thing. But
mm-hmm.
my father would go to work and come back home. And my sister and my brother don't remember this, but I would hear just commotion, things hitting the floor and all, this and that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what anything about abuse or nothing. We just knew something was going on. I knew, not them.
Mm-hmm.
I knew something was going, was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's basically it started out me listening. Then after he left us, we became the target.
Okay. Okay.
Mainly me.
Okay, see. Okay, this is the part that I got angry at being who I am. I grew up in a house with no dad. My dad wasn't in our life, so I couldn't relate to the dad thing at that time. But the idea that he abused your mom, he would close his door, abuse her, and then open up the door. That concept of, I didn't understand it. And then I didn't understand, you said you loved your father. And I couldn't get the concept of you, when you really realized that he was beating on her, you still loved him, and I couldn't understand it. And he left, even though he was taking care and kept taking care of everybody and doing his job as the father, but he didn't stay in the house, which is fine. But the idea that he was beating on her, and I want you to answer me this, and where was he living, and why did he never brought you guys, did he ever eventually get you guys back? I mean, did y'all ever come together again as a family?
No, no.
Okay. Okay.
So I think you haven't got to that part.
Well, you guys, first of all, let me say this. This book is 321 pages, okay? And I was trying, let me tell you, I was up at last night at 2 and 3. I think I went to bed about 2:30 last night because I could not close the book. So you know your book has to be good if you catch me like that. I could not close that book. Okay.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for saying it. I just want people to hear that it is a page turner.
Oh,
it's something that catches your attention of knowing, want to know what happened, you know, to keep on.
Yeah.
So at the beginning.
You made it a page turner. Like, okay,
thank
what
you.
Happened before that? So this is my thing, and I know back in the day, because it reminds me of the 70s when we were growing, I could literally, that's why I kept saying, I could relate to what you were talking about. If anybody out there listening, all my listeners, if you don't know about growing up in the city, and I'm saying up north, south is different when it comes to city life. Up north, if you were raised up north and you grew up in the city, there was an aura, there was an ambiance. That's what I want to say, audience of living in the city, the real city, and you lived in these houses, and they had the stoops, the high stoops, and you sat outside with your friends, you went around to the park, you played in the playground, you played with your friends, you fought with your friends, you played double disc. When you do all that, and that's what I kept seeing, and then you were talking about the songs that your auntie kept playing, somebody kept playing over and over again. And I was like, man, this reminds me of how my mom used to do the parties and stuff. People, if you've never experienced a good house party, you don't know nothing about a house party. And I kept like, we just you. I was like, oh, man, this reminds me so much of when we grew up. But, and I got off the subject a little bit because I got a little excited there. But your dad, my thing is, okay, he left. Why did he leave? Was that ever established? Why did he leave?
No. Actually, he never said why he left. Only reason, and I sit there and I blame myself, is because he knew that I eventually became, because I was nosy, I actually know what he was actually doing to her. And
okay.
And I think he was felt more like, okay, I don't want to keep hurting my kids, but especially now that the secret is out what he was doing. But I'm not going to ever, I mean, I know it was wrong, but it was took me, now it's three parts to this book. It's
uh-huh.
Two more parts to this book. It took me to the third part to actually know and learn the reason why. Not from him, not from
uh-huh.
my mother, from what God started revealing to me. So I actually know why. I don't want to give it away because, you know, it's two more parts. Now it's two more parts to this book.
Is it already written and published, or is it in the book? Are you saying that's part of the book?
Yeah. The
okay.
They
okay.
are written already. They are written.
Okay.
One just got edited. And I'm waiting on us to finish the book cover, and so we
okay.
can get that one out.
Oh, man. So you left us hanging. That's what you just told
yes.
me.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You should see everybody that's in Detroit that I know that have read it. When is part two coming out? When is part two coming out?
That's all I hear. That is so awesome. Okay, now, we established that there's a reason why, we just don't know what the reason why the dad left. Now, let's talk about mama.
My mama.
Let me ask you this. With your mom, and I was listening to how you were talking about the rest of the family. Something's missing in that family. So can you basically tell me the dynamics of your mom's family and what's missing?
Yes.
Okay.
Missing in that family is a family bond. There was no bond because my grandmother sent everybody to live with their daddy. My mother, daddy was killed right before she was born or after she was born. So she had to live with her sister, my auntie.
Okay.
And so that's how her learning as mother, being a parent, being everything was not there.
Okay.
She was dealing with her own secrets. That I later, it explains in part three,
okay.
When God started doing
it
for me.
Doggone it. Okay.
It's revealed in there. So
your grandmother just sent everybody away. She didn't want to be the mother? She didn't want to be no mother.
And see, the thing is, we're not going to know what hurt my grandmother's parents did to her, the reason why she didn't want no kids, because it's a lot of them, but out of all my mother's siblings, we knew one auntie and one uncle.
So
we didn't know them. We did not know them until we got older.
What?
And we still don't know them.
Uh-huh.
We don't know them at all. So, unfortunately, my grandmother died. And my one uncle dad, and actually my auntie dad. So my mother is the only one that could tell us, but she's keeping everything a secret. So this is why I want everyone to know the secrets. I'm breaking the cycle. I'm revealing all the secrets that I know of, that I experienced, that God started revealing to me, and that it's come out slowly. But she didn't know how to be a mother. She didn't know how to do this. The only way she knew how to be a mother at the time, because we was treated fine, is when my daddy was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then after he left, that's when hell broke loose.
Mm-hmm. Hold that thought, because when we come back, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Through the Eyes of the Black Woman and with author Ernestine Moore.
Hi, I'm Salita, the owner of Say Your Peace Radio Network. We would like to invite you to join our team. By becoming a host, for more information, check out our website at sensible64.wix.com/Say Your Peace Network. That's Say Your PIECE Network. We will return with Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salita.
Somebody just took part of my soul and just ripped it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it wasn't intended for me to find out, but because the way it was, but I felt that if it had, she hadn't told her supposed to be boyfriend, it would have never
mm-hmm.
got out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was so devastated.
Now, what I've noticed. Your mom, and that's why I think there had to be something going on in your mom's childhood. And I say this, or as she grew up into a woman, I say this because she was like a revolving door. After your dad left, it's like all hell broke loose. Was
right.
your dad keeping her contained? Or what? What do you think happened once your dad left? You know who I'm talking about. Not your real dad. I'm talking about your dad that was there for you.
Right. And that's the only dad that I'm going to remember. So I don't know about the other. I think that whatever he was trying to stop her to do,
mm-hmm.
trying to make her clean her act up, she wouldn't do it. And I think that's where the beatings came in at.
So he
long as he was there, he kept it together. He didn't want us to see any violence, so she didn't. That's why I believe that he closed that door, when
mm-hmm.
so we wouldn't see it, but we could hear it. And like I said, we didn't know anything about fighting, didn't
mm-hmm.
know anything about any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When he opened the door and I heard her crying, that's what made me put two and two together.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you something. How old was your mother? Do you remember?
At the time?
Yeah.
No, I don't remember exactly she had to be like, okay, I was born in 65. She's 20 years older than me. Maybe in her 20s?
Yeah, she had to be in her early 20s. Yeah, in her 20s. Okay, now, Lena, let's talk about Lena. What was her problem, her situation?
Now,
was Lena, she was the cousin or what? She was the cousin.
She was my auntie's daughter.
Okay.
One of her daughters.
Okay.
Yeah.
What happened with her?
Lila came up here from Ohio,
mm-hmm.
To get away from her abusive husband.
Mm-hmm.
So they wasn't saying abusive back then. They were saying, and being nosy, I could hear them talking, and that's how I found out that he was beating her. He was
mm-hmm.
beating her. I'm laughing because the part I said I'm being nosy.
No, in the book I saw you said that. You were the one who was curious about everything. You wanted to know what was going on
At all times. I was always observing this and I always observing that, and I still do at this till day. I still
mm-hmm.
do the same
mm-hmm.
thing. I'm
mm-hmm.
quick to notice anything that's out of place, out of character, out of everything. I'm quick to
mm-hmm.
notice. And that comes from me being like that from 2 years old.
Mm-hmm. Now, prior to when you were born, there were some issues with you. You want to talk about the issues?
The issues where I said I beat the odds was me being born premature and weighed
mm-hmm.
5 pounds. To me, 5 pounds was a small baby.
Yes.
So I had yellow ginas.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, they didn't have the technology, the equipment that they have now to help cure it. So it helped cause me to have vision problems.
Okay. Okay.
And so, unfortunately, I have to wear glasses.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you know where you got it? I mean, how did you get it? Was it from your mom or what?
I think Jonas is, I'm not for sure all the techno issues of as far as what causes Jonas and all of that. I'm not for sure. How did I get it? Was
mm-hmm.
she taking the right prenatal care
yeah.
and all that stuff? I'm not for sure. But I did ask her why was I born in Cleveland and why my sister was born in Steubenville. And she said that she was living with her friend at the time, and that's where I have to be born at. And that was the only thing that I know of, excuse me, as far as my childhood.
Man. Now, okay, the first person who molested you, who was the
you
first
said
person?
The,
I'm sorry, the first person who molested you, who was the first person who molested you?
My mother's boyfriend.
Okay.
The one who actually told me about my daddy not being my real daddy.
Okay. That's why, and I wanted you to say that for a reason. And I've always been this way about being single women, bringing all these crazy men around your daughters. Oh my God. And
mm-hmm.
your story is so pathetic that the point that people need to hear this. When you bring in all these different men around your girls and you have no respect for them, and then we have no other choice but unconditionally love you because you're mom. You understand what I'm saying? All that
right.
you went through, you still loved your mom despite how she did you. You still loved your mom. The ideal that you were raped one time, and then I think on average, how often were you sexually molested, and how many times were you sexually molested?
Basically, when she started, after my cousin arrived, and she introduced my mother into the stuff that I said I saw her doing.
Mm-hmm.
So she would go to the doctor. They doctor hopping almost basically every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so So basically, it was an everyday thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
then,
every
time she would leave the house to go to the quote unquote doctor.
Yes, every time she would go to the point to where you saw that I had said that I became addicted to what he was doing.
Exactly.
I became addicted to what he was doing, and it was almost like, okay, I can't wait till my mama heard to leave now. Because in my mind, he manipulated me so bad to think that was right, and
mm-hmm.
that it was, and the feeling, because once you introduce us to sex at an early age, that's where I think the addiction come in at, because this is something
exactly.
we don't supposed to know.
Exactly.
And so when he did that, I was like, okay, where my mama going to go to the doctor? When is she going to go to the doctor? So he couldn't do what he had to do, because it started feeling it starts feeling good to you when you start, at, you know, when he
you
was doing it at the time.
Yep. And,
I thought that I was his girl. I was like, in there I described that I became my mother's boyfriend of a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm 7 years old.
At 7 years old. Do you guys hear that? At 7 years old, she was doing womanly things, what we call womanly, quote-unquote, things, with a grown man. And you know what fascinated me, too, about your story? Is the blatantness of the men. They didn't care how old you were. These were inbred child molesters from the get-go.
Yeah.
Inbred child molesters. From uncle to cousin to friend around the corner, I could not believe how much they made it. It was all right for them to sleep with little girls. Man, it was like, what do you guys understand? These are little girls. And it's like it didn't even dawn on them. And the idea that your mom, and see, what I couldn't understand, and I related to you when you said, I was feeling you when you said to your dad, take us away from this. Why don't you take us out of this? And he could never give you a valid reason why he didn't want to take you away.
Right. And then also, he never knew about any of the molestation. We kept that a secret. So that's, and the reason why I say we now, because when I had my third child, I found out that my mother's boyfriend was molesting my sister.
Oh, my God.
It was just like, it was just a normal conversation, and then she was like, that old bastard, he molested me. And I looked at her in shock, I said, he molested you too? So can you understand the reason why I was so in shock? Because we in the same house, and I didn't see it.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're
I
good.
Didn't see it.
They're good when they're doing their little dirt. They're good at what they do. They they practice it and they perfect the art of molestation. Basically, that's what it is. They perfect the art. It's like being a thief.
They perfect
how to be a thief.
Right. And that's where I wanted to bring the awareness in, because if I didn't know that he was doing it to my sister, she didn't know he was doing that to me. See how good he did, and keep both of us quiet, and to say, we have to know what's going on around our kids, because here I go doing something that my mother was supposed to be doing, he there every time he leave out the house, and you trusted him around your daughters.
Mm-hmm.
The killing part was after when I got raped at 12, and she took us around other guys, and they was about to do the same thing to me again. It was like I became. Once the first time I got molested, it opened the doors for everything else. Like I said, my uncle. And for some reason, I knew the difference between my uncle touching me and him.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like I felt okay for the my mother's boyfriend to do it, but not my uncle, because I knew that you're not supposed to touch me down there. You're not supposed to touch me down there.
And your family. See, that's what just kind of mind boggles me, is that your family, that was your blood. Your uncle so-and-so, why are you doing this to me? Why would you want to do this to me? And that's why I said it's more, and eventually maybe you'll reveal it in one of your books, your mom's background alone, just to hear that your uncle and then her with the pills, it had to be something that went on. It had to be something that went on to get her to the point where, now, another question is, she was taking these pills. Was she taking these pills when she was with your dad, and that's why your dad was beating on her, or what? Was that ever revealed?
That part wasn't revealed. I'm thinking it was something else, the partying and something else. It could have been. I'm not for sure. I might not ever know. Because I don't have that close relationship with my mother to where I want to really sit down and talk to her about anything that happened in the past. So I might not never know the exact reason why. But if you look at it, it was like another boyfriend of hers that we consider him as our daddy that took care of us too, that we actually had He didn't do none of this stuff. He treated us just like his daughter, but he tried to stop her from taking them pills, and the same exact thing, she got rid of them. She didn't want them. You tell her what to do about it and get her, open her mind to, you're not supposed to be taking these pills.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these pills are where you are incoherent to where you don't know nothing is going on. But I'm going to tell you, them beatings that she would do to us had us so scared and had me so scared that if she was high,
mm-hmm.
and you know she's not going to know none of the stuff that we doing, but we
mm-hmm.
still, and we still don't know why we would get beaten, because we wasn't bad. We didn't know nothing about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so why would you hit us? Why would you beat us while we in the tub? Why would you do this? You know, why would you do that? And so I think more I got the beaten because I asked why. What did we do?
Well, I think that was her way. When she reflected back on a lot of things that she was doing, and she was angry, and you guys were the first witness of what she's done, or you were the result of her life, because we do that. We lash out in anger when we're really angry at ourselves. We have nobody
mm-hmm.
else to lash out with or to or at. We take the next innocent person, and that's our children. We abuse our children. I think about the idol that your dad left. And she's struggling and trying to make things happen on her own. Were you guys on welfare majority of the time that you were young?
Yes, we was
okay.
with her. But my daddy, you got to remember, he worked there for her, and he brung her
money over every week. Money all the time,
yes. He brought her money. So it wasn't like that he wasn't taking care of us. It was
mm-hmm.
what she was doing with the money that made us go through the bullying, the stealing food, because we had a car
mm-hmm.
stealing food to eat. Namely me, because my sister and my brother didn't get treated as bad as me. So
mm-hmm.
I was the one that got the most money, I think, so too, because they say I look like her, and because my mouth. I'm
mm-hmm.
always questioning why, because if you doing something to me, I want to know why.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I want to know why. And so that was that, but I mean, oh my God, the stuff that I went through, and I'm thinking about it, and it's just, when I started writing that book, I had to relive it, and so, but I can go through it now, I can go through all that, because God revealed so much to me, I have a better understanding, I know the reason why that I went through that was not just for me, but it's to help someone else, and at the time you're going through that, you question why, but then I really didn't do too much. I just went ahead, still cared about her because she was my mother. I clung, you know, we become clingy to our abuser. So if you think about
yes.
it, when somebody
yes.
becomes clingy to somebody, something is going on, or if somebody comes distant, you either can cling or be distant. And I
exactly.
cling to my mother. I couldn't stand the boyfriend, but I cling to him because of what he was doing, because he made me addicted to what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And actually I protected him, because if my daddy had found out, I didn't want him to go to jail, so I didn't say nothing.
Yeah,
your
daddy would have probably killed him. Now,
yeah.
There's a part in the book where your mom, where did she get a gun from?
I have no idea. And that's, oh my God, that part hurted me too. And I swear, after he beat her, and I got tired of him hitting. This was the guy, her boyfriend. So can't
yeah.
anybody, because we flipping. After he beat her, and I got tired because she was beating me. Anger, rage, to start just forming, building up in my mind, because she's my mother. I can't fight him back, so I got to take it off somebody. So one day,
exactly.
the one day he was beating her, and today, matter of fact, today I was just reminded of it because I went back in the area where everything started at, and I was saying,
mm-hmm.
imagine this long block, and after this man beat my mama, and I stabbed him, and I ran outside with no coat and no shoes on, and our snow be up to our our snow was up past, almost close to our waist, and I'm running down the street, and not one person asked why this little kid or stopped to see why I was running outside in the snow with no shoes and no coat on. the blocks are so long, they make two or three blocks in one, and I'm just running. And that's going to be in there. Every time I visit an area where I used to live at, it brings me to that book because I describe so much stuff in there. It's like you could just be on that same street. If you didn't know where the street was at, you would know about me.
By the time,
by the time you would be like, okay, I know where that street at now because she done said it. She done said it. It's just like they know when they if they mention my sister, if they say her name, she's like, I feel like I know you. I read that book and I feel like I know you already. It's so wonderful that the people that read it, even the powerful people that we know that read it, our commissioner here, our state rep, you know, it's just a lot of people. Oh my God, just supported me and they just say, your story is so good, and it brings a smile to my face because although it was bad, but it's doing something to help someone else. It got so many people that never spoke about their abuse to start speaking it to me. So I was like, okay, I know my purpose. My purpose is to help everyone that dealt with the same situation, endured the same horrible situation, and they are starting to have their own voice. They speaking it out. They talking about it. It's like I share, and I feel honored that they share something they never told anybody. These are nurses. These are all kinds of people that he just brought me into contact with, and they was like, wow. And I just be happy, just like you said, when you said it too. I was just smiling when you said it was a good book, that it was something that you could not put down.
But you know what, Ernestine, to be honest with you, if I had the money to make that into a movie, it would be no doubt.
Everybody's been saying that they see
that would be an awesome movie. I'm serious. That book would be an awesome movie. Now
you hear that, guy? We got all these confirmations.
I'm like, man, I can see the little girl with the pigtails in her. I can see all that because I'm a very
ugly
hairstyle.
That was an ugly hairstyle, I swear. But you know what made me upset is when I was called ugly, I was being abused, I was doing all this stuff, and I kept on saying, they kept on feeling like I'm ugly, or keep telling me, instilling in my head that I'm ugly. Why they keep trying to touch me? Why are they touching on me? Why are they doing
exactly.
this?
Exactly. Oh, my God. I can't tell my story, but me and you got to talk after we get off air. Definitely.
Okay.
We got to talk. But, my thing is, just reading that, and I was like, okay, this baby, okay, this is my question I have, and it just makes me mad. All this stuff was going on, where the hell was social service? Where was the caseworkers? Where was the doggone, you had, when you were raped by Pookie, you had one visit with a psychologist. What the hell happened? Because, see, this is what people need to recognize.
Right.
Back then, we weren't important. This is why I'm a very bad advocate. I'm a very good advocate when it comes to black people. And I say this. Women back then, girls back then, were not viewed as important.
Yeah.
So, as long as she got her food stamp, as long as she got her paycheck, well, daddy came by and nobody cared about the time, numerous times y'all moved, how you got evicted out of your house. Nobody moved when your mom stayed high. The police came to the door, escorted you home, and let you go back in that house and your mom was drunk. Do you think that would have happened in a white neighborhood? Hell no.
No.
They took some babies and put them in foster care or gave them to another relative. That's why I fuss about that. I'm also doing a series called The Stolen Women by Dr. Gail Wyatt, and it's about us, African-American women, and how our sexuality was taken from us and turned into something ugly when it was so sacred. If you go into our African history, it was sacred for a woman. Her very being was sacred. When we came over here, the first thing we were introduced to was rape by the white man. I'm not getting into the race thing. I'm just making a point how, after a while, even the ones that are supposed to love us found us sexually
attractive,
available, and attractive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm listening. when I'm listening to your story, I'm like, this is a baby. This is a baby trying to live and survive in a world so terrible, so horrible, and kept quiet about what was going on with her. You are so lucky, because there's a lot of women who could not survive what you survived. There's no way, shape, form, or fashion. And I really encourage women to pick up this book, Casualty of Silence by Ernestine Moore. It is an awesome book. And getting back, I'm sorry, get off my soapbox there for a second. Now, all I'm saying is I think it's so empowering that we as black women start looking at how we allow the things that happen in our lives. And I'm not saying your situation. I'm saying as far as we allow these crazy-ass men to come into our life, and when we let them in, they go after our kids, our daughters, you know, our nieces. What is this thing about being obsessed with having sex with a little girl? What the hell is that? But because it was embedded in them years ago, it's generational now.
It is. It is. And it started with them, too.
You got grown-ass people having sex with babies. What is attractive about a flat-chested little girl? What is fascinating by that? And then you have mothers out there having babies at a very young age. So you have babies having babies having babies.
Right. Because I had mine at 14, 15.
Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But you see what happened. You see what, why, even though you, and you said in there you thought you were pregnant at one time, and you wanted
right.
to be pregnant. Because you yep. wanted somebody, the same innate thing that we use all the time.
Yeah.
We want somebody to love us. So the first thing
that's what I was...
is when you're pregnant. Because, see, a baby will love us regardless, unconditionally, because guess what? That's our baby.
Right.
So we don't look at the down the road. We don't look into the future when we make these kind of decisions. We don't think about, because we're not old enough, we're not mature enough to know, okay, you got to continue to feed this baby until they're 18 years old. You got to be able to hold these babies. You got to be able to shelter these babies. You got to make sure the health care and they're getting back and forth to the doctors. You got to do all of this for the next 18, almost 20 years. Are we looking at that? No, because we're not teaching our young girls how important their body is. We're not going back to when they were back in Africa where the woman's body was a sacred thing. You didn't just lay up with anybody. But because we were Americanized, quote, unquote, we learn that the body of the girl and the body of the woman, the black woman, it's not, it's sexual, it's sensual, it's lusty. Every time you look at her, she wants to drop her drawers. That's the image that was given to us and given to our men to continue to keep doing this. That's why it's easy for them to walk around half naked nowadays. It's easy because that's what's been taught us, that's how our body is. And that's why I'm saying this, because we've got to learn somewhere that the woman's body is not for everybody. We've got to learn that. And in your book, you're telling us the cons of what happens because of the mindset of your family members. You
right.
know, family
mm-hmm.
members. What the hell? What is sexy about a 7-year-old?
Nothing at all. I mean, just like you said, like I said, they thought I was ugly. They said, you ugly, you this and that. And I'm looking like, then if I am ugly, why they can't keep their hands off me? And then you know what makes me mad? When people say that it's our clothes, and I'll be like, that's a dang old lie. Because my mama kept going to Goodwill. There was no sexy clothes and wearing no bell bottom pants. She done messed my man up so bad that I do not like nobody with bell bottom pants.
Are you serious?
Yes. They will always say, I don't like these kids. No matter what you have on. If they rape a 90-year-old to a 1-year-old, ain't no, to what?
It has nothing
why?
To do with our clothes.
It's not, it has nothing to do with our clothes. We should have the right to wear whatever we want to wear or dress. And I didn't have no clothes. So how do I dress provocative when we didn't have nothing? We wore Goodwill clothes.
Exactly.
We got keys and people wanted to bite, beat us up because we had this. Every freaking thing that went on in my life was the cause of my mother. She caused us to be bullied at school because we wore. She caused us to steal from the stores because we couldn't eat like that.
Mm-hmm.
This by that time you would buy food stamps, and we used to beg her, "Mama, can you buy these high, get the high amount of food stamps so we won't be hungry?"
Mm-hmm.
Because and my daddy would always, she always had to tell your daddy, he wouldn't give her the money, and that's what made her dislike my sister, because when he started giving my sister the money, because I was always the type, I didn't take care of household things or whatever, but my sister did. When we got older, she started.
Mm-hmm.
My sister's like, "I'm not going to give you this money so you can give to that man. I'm not going to do this. We hungry." My sister would steal the money to pay the rent. My sister would steal the money to go buy, get extra food and all that. I tried to, and this is another thing that's more important, everyone. Because of all the stuff that was happening to me, happening every day, I tried to get out, you know, when you try to escape from the abuse, you put yourself in a more dangerous situation.
Exactly.
That's how I got raped. That's how I got raped. And the main thing about it, I got raped at a park not far from the main street, just about maybe 10 or 15 feet away from the main street, and not one person helped me until a guy came out the building and heard me. He heard me screaming, and he the one who saved me. All these cars riding up and down the street, up and down Jefferson, not one person stopped to help me while this boy beating the daylights out of me. And I'm so glad that actually that's what saved me from feeling what he did below, because he was beating me in my face. And guys always target your face. That's our weakest point. They're going to target your face. And because I kept, and the fool followed me to the jail. And when he triggered, and I'm going to tell you, he triggered something to say, "Oh, go tell, they're not going to believe." And that, when he said that, that brought me to where my uncle touched me down there and in the house when they came up here to visit us. This was my auntie's husband. And my grandma knew. It's not no secret. They knew what goes on in our family because of the actions. When I started writing this book, I learned about the stuff that they was doing and trying to shield us from. They knew. They just wasn't telling on them. They didn't keep us from it. But my grandma said, "Get out of here where my grandkids at." That's what made me think about, she knew. My mama knew. Everybody in the family knew that these guys do this to the females in there, and they failed to protect us. But when that boy said that and he went in there, he followed me to the jail. I said, "Okay, I wasn't going to say it. I was going to keep quiet." But when he triggered me, because I was scared again, and when he said that, I said, "Okay." And I went inside of the jail, the precinct, and they said, "May I help you?" I said, "Yeah, he just raped me." He followed me in there because he thought they weren't going to believe me.
Mm-hmm.
But, and so happened,
and
they did. So
they
happened.
They immediately grabbed him and handcuffed him. You guys.
And
okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, just the answer to the question that you had said about the when I got raped and I went to that one session.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't as high, for, like more statistics of being raped at, In Detroit, we would consider as the low thing, whether they major concern. So there was only one, and that was the one that they took me to counseling. And when that lady left to go on maternity leave, they didn't transfer me to nobody else. So all I did was talk to her that one day. The rest of it, I had to deal with myself. And when I got home and that family was threatening me and my mama was tired, she couldn't even protect me. We had to call my daddy. And I was so mad that, and I said that too, when she came to the door and the police saw that she was not able to stand straight up, and you still let me go in that house?
Yes, yes.
And you still let us go in that house?
They should have grabbed you, found out if there was any more kids in the house, and got you guys out of that house. And I just don't, I'm not comprehending that, but because again, It comes back to the race issue.
Mm-hmm.
They did not think that we were that important. And that's the reason why a lot of things went unchecked back then in the 60s, 70s, and some of the 80s in some places. They went unchecked. And this is why we're where we're at now. And when I made the statement about the way women dress, I said this because the body is sacred. There's no need for you to expose anything to anybody.
Right.
That's why I said about the clothes we wear. It has a lot to do, not the idea that men touch us or rape us, but if you carry yourself in a certain way, the first thing, a man is like an animal. He in heat, and all he want to do is get take care of business. We have to prevent that from our end. Because the man's mind is, she got that tight dress on, she's easy. That's his mindset.
Yeah.
We can't mess with that. We can't change that. That's something they got to work on. But you as the woman, because you can have a long dress on and be hoish, as you can have a short dress on. But in their mindset, I was listening to this lady was talking about how sexy she is, bragging about her big butt, you know. And I'm saying to myself, so this is all you have to offer? This is all you have to offer. You're not talking about how intelligent you are. You're not talking about you can have a decent conversation. But you're talking about your butt and your breasts and your flat stomach. To me, what
that's
is
all
that?
She thought her, so.
And that's how she sees herself. And that's how she wants the world to see her. We have to change our mindset, too, about how we see each other and how we see ourselves. Because we're more than a big butt. We're more than a big breast. We're more than a flat stomach. And we're more than big legs. We're more than that. So it's up to us to change the mindset about ourselves and how we see ourselves. We're not a piece of meat. But we put ourselves out there like that. And we don't have to. That's the scary part about where our children, our young girls are now. They don't have role models. I mean, it's pathetic when you call a role model. You don't see those anymore. They're obsolete to a certain extent. So reading your book, and, man, you guys just don't know. I want you guys to get a hold of that book. Before we get, I'm down to 3 minutes. Dog, understand? Look what you did. Down to 3 minutes. I want you to tell us how to get a hold of your book.
Right now, on Amazon, it's on ebook, so you can get it from there. And the other part, you can get the paperback from me for this at this moment. You can get it from me you can go through my PayPal account or email me at my email address, which is Ernestine_Jones2000@yahoo.com.
Okay.
And the paperback is $15.
Okay. And how much is the ebook?
I set it at a price of 99 cents, only because I really wanted to get everyone to read the story so they could share with other people. Because I really think, just like how you really said about the mindset of someone, if your parents endured the same thing that I did, they had no knowledge because they were covered in their own self abuse or the abuse of them. Well, what happened to them? They wasn't able to care and teach them kids something because they dealing with their own demons as far as what happened to them. So
that's
where I stopped. I stopped judging everyone, and I did my best I can for my kids. I made sure, although I was there not mentally, but I was there physically, I made sure, but I should have been there mentally for them, but I couldn't because of what I was dealing with. My soul was dark, but I still raised my kids. My oldest is 32. He's the one who kind of flat off. And my youngest, I got 6 kids. And the youngest are 24. I have twin boys. Woo!
Oh, my God.
That's
we got to talk about that.
For right there.
Ms. Ernestine,
they
we
are...
got to go. Ms. Ernestine, I'm definitely have to go. This is what we're going to do. We're going to bring you back, okay? I want to thank everybody who's listening in and tune in again with Through the Eyes of the Black Woman on the Say Your Peace Radio Network. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.